Good afternoon. It is really, there it is. It wasn't where I had checked it to be just a few minutes ago. It is a real pleasure to be here and to be able to present at the IDEA Conference. I have been one who has, I would call it regularly attend this event and neighborhood association. So it's a great honor and a privilege to be here in front of this group here today. A couple of things I want to do right off the bat is I want to make sure that I recognize some important people and organizations today. I want to thank those who have put this together. And if I've left somebody off, it's I apologize, but I think this is correct. The Schaefer Leadership Academy, Muncie Action Plan, Ball State Office of Community Engagement, Building Better Neighborhoods. I believe they're the ones who have put together the IDEA Conference. So thank you so much for what you do for our neighborhoods. Also, I want to give a big thank you to Ivy Tech. What an incredible facility that we have, and what an incredible community room that they have put together for us. So I think let's give them a round of applause as well. A couple other people I want to recognize just briefly. First of all, the photographs that you're going to see in the slide presentation, or the PowerPoint presentation, I guess, those are from Mike Rhodes. So I saw him earlier. Well, he was taken. There he is. So thank you so much for those. We appreciate it. You do great work. Jace Crean is in the back of the room. He has been my number one resource. I'm decent with technology, and that might be generous. But he has really helped put this together, and I greatly appreciate that. So thank you so much. Just for my information, because we've got a mixed group here of those who attended the conference and those who didn't. If you were part, if you attended the IDEA Conference, just raise your hand. Okay. So it looks like all of you, most of you stayed, so that's great. That's great. So I do want to thank each of you who were involved in your neighborhoods for your contribution because you're giving up your time, you're giving up your effort, but you're giving back to the community, and it is greatly appreciated, and it really works. Building from the ground up is one of the best things that can happen, and you guys who take advantage of and participate in those neighborhoods make all of that happen. So thank you so much for that. I see that there are several elected officials, so I'm going to ask the elected officials to stand. I am smart enough to know as a, well, I guess current elected official, I almost said past, current elected official, not to let each of them introduce themselves because of time commitments. But if you're an elected official, city or county or a state, please stand. I appreciate each of you being here today. I also know the rigors that are involved in going through that process, but there's so much heartfelt joy in being able to serve the public. So, but I appreciate all of your service. I would also like to recognize some members of my team. So I know several are here today. We have a few that are on spring break. So those who were part of the panel earlier, we couldn't get into any financial questions because our controller was one of those who's on spring break. But I know David Smith is here, economic development. This is in no particular order, by the way. Melissa Peace, are you? There she is in the front row, our deputy police chief, Ethan Browning with the animal control. Thank you for being here. Carl Malone, I see him there. Thank you. Steve Selvey in the back, as usual, in the back. Fire Chief David Miller, is he there? He is. Nathan Sloan, there he is. Police Chief Yvonne Thompson, there she is. Yvonne's back there. Thank you. Let's see, Brian Stevens Hotop, and he's also in the back. You're going to see more of him later. We have a video. Dustin, right here, Dustin Clark. I noticed Bill Hughes walk in, so he's one of our city attorneys. Are any of the other city attorneys here? I didn't catch him. Okay. So he's part of the team. Trent Conway is on vacation. Micah Wilson, who is my executive assistant, is on vacation. And Nancy Larson is under the weather today. I will say that I have three children who live out of town, and so none of them are here today. This was not a requirement or an expectation. In fact, one lives in Vermont, went to Ball State, and he's now, what, an assistant principal? Yeah, he's in Vermont. We have another one in New York who went to Purdue. Boiler up, I guess. And he's builds helicopters, and then we have one who went to Marion University. So Matt, Mike, and Brendan are not here, but I do think daughter Allie is here with her husband, Zach. They're over there. They live here in town. They live on the southeast side. And Allie is, and I'll probably get this wrong, 38 weeks pregnant. So we're expecting a little girl. So we'll take all your prayers and positive thoughts on that. And I will say that, and I think Sherry will agree with me, Zach, do expect for this little girl to be spoiled. So, and lastly, but most importantly, my wife Sherry's up here on the front row. When I come home at night, and sometimes in phone calls during the day, we'll say, she has to listen to all my, she's a sounding board for me. So she listens to all the challenges, all the concerns that I have, all of my lame brain ideas, because she'll tell me. But also she lets me bounce ideas off of her, and my life would not be the same without you. Thank you. So are you guys ready to look at some photographs from Mike Rhodes? You ready for the State of the City address? Okay, everybody who's ready, say, I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, there were four of you who didn't do that. We'll do it one more time. Everybody who's ready, say, I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, let's get going. So, I am extremely proud and humbled for the voters to have elected me to be the mayor. And those who know me well know that I get quite emotional, so I'm doing my best right now. I understand the responsibility. I understand what the expectations are, and I will do it. I will do it to the best of my ability, and my purpose will be to treat everybody as equally as I can based on the information I have. So communication is important, so please feel free to reach out and communicate, and because sometimes decisions would be different if we have more information. So please know that. So let's see if we can get this going. So we're going to start and end awfully quick with this particular topic, but out of every crisis, this is from Nina O'Neill, out of every crisis comes the chance to be reborn. The citizens of Muncie have really had some unpleasant moments, or embarrassing moments, I guess I'll call them, that they've tested us as a government, and I think us as a people. It seemed like year after year and time after time, one government official after another, leader, not all elected, but a leader after another made what I'll just call wrong choices, and has put us as a city in a difficult spot. I think that's tested our resolve and our resilience, but I say that do not fret. Better and brighter days are ahead for Muncie. We're moving forward. And so Muncie will be, as the statement says there, will be reborn. And we're going to be reborn into a local government that is honest and open and seeks excellence. Will we make mistakes? Absolutely. Have we already? Absolutely. But this is what we're trying to do. We are seeking excellence, and that's what we're attempting to do. So I'm going to start with some of the challenges. The biggest one when we took office were the finances. At the end of 2019, there clearly were some challenges. I think we've got it there. Yeah, there were 18 accounts. So if you know, have any of you ever been a controller of a city? Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. But there are literally hundreds of different accounts. And if you're buying a new vehicle for the street department, that goes in one account. If you're buying equipment to repair, or you're buying services to repair that street, that vehicle, it goes into another account. When you're paying employees, it goes to an account. There's all these different accounts, literally hundreds of accounts. 18 of them, highly used funds. When we took office on January 1st, the first thing I did on January 1st is I pulled this report to know where we are. You got to know where you are in order to know where you want to go. So we pulled this account, and there were 18, and the negative amount was $3,310,929. Now, I want to explain this. This was the grand total of all those negatives, and we'll touch base on some of these. But this was something in the first couple of weeks we had to dig into, and we had to figure out how in the world could there be something we thought missing. What we have found, there's nothing missing. Out of these funds, there's nothing missing. What we found is there were maybe some operational procedures that weren't followed, and some reimbursements had never been sent in. Some receipts had never been sent in. And because a few of these, quite a few of these, were nothing more than you receive a grant, you pay the expense, and then you have to send the expenses in to get the money from the grant. And so we're in the process of getting all that done. That is not the case with two of the accounts, and they're included in this total. One is the mayor's edits funds. That's an amount that comes in each and every month. The mayor gets out of the economic development income tax. The mayor receives amount each and every month and is able to use those for whatever the mayor deems important. Now, originally it was set up for economic development, but it goes for a lot of things in our community. And I'll tell you what, helping our not-for-profits is part of economic development. Paying debt is part of our economic development. And so there's not much left over. In fact, it looked like we started the year with negative $250,000. And it looks like if I spent the exact same amount as the previous administration, we would be negative $384,000. So I knew I had to make some changes. And the other thing was, I was immediately talking about these negative funds, so I knew there was no way I was going to have a negative fund. So what this meant was, I had to go back and tell some people no. I had to go back and tell some consultants no. Or let's readjust this. We can't do everything that's always been done just because it's always been done. We have to be good stewards of your money, of the city's money. So I will tell you that at the end of February, I think we had a $21,000 balance. We've erased the deficit, and we now have $21,000 in that account. The other and the largest challenge that we're faced with is the local road and streets. The local road and streets fund was negative $1,937,869.66, to be exact. What we have discovered, and Brian has already submitted over $500,000 of expenses all the way back, for several years, for quite a few years, but he was able to find that much in expenses. We've had to contact people, organizations, groups that we had done work with, construction companies, to reestablish where we were on those particular counts. We got copies back in, and we've submitted those. So as part of the Crossroads grant, we do expect about $500,000 of that to come back. The other part of it, and I'll touch on this briefly, I think the other reason that this one was so negative was the fact that, have any of you been up and down Wheeling lately? Okay. That was a federal grant. The federal grants require that the cities pay up front. So if you want Wheeling paved, you need to thank the previous administration. Because they went ahead, they did, and it's going to happen, and it'll be finished this year. So Wheeling will be completely redone from Centennial to McGalliard, and it's our portion is paid for. That's a big part of that $1.9 million, and then what we have found. Now, it still leaves us several hundred thousand dollars short and has put a real crink in what I had hoped to do. Which was I had planned to come in and just pave. But I didn't expect to be negative $1.9 million. But we have been spending a lot of time working on 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019 paperwork instead of working on 2020 issues and challenges and goals. But we're mostly caught up on that. And if you look at other departments, I know Gretchen's Community Development, they have worked really hard and have submitted quite a bit, and they've knocked off several hundred thousand dollars of what they were off. The police department has one of theirs off. And again, most of these were grants, so we don't believe there's any money missing. But we do believe that money was spent in 2019 that should have been spent in 2020, but we're working through all that. And we're making great progress. Let's see. We've done that. Okay. So we started with $3,310,929. I want to explain that doesn't mean we didn't have any cash. We had cash in the bank. It just meant those particular accounts. So money was pulled. If you can think of the school system, money was pulled from this account to pay for something that's not what it was earmarked for. That's the kind of thing that happened. And we're not doing that anymore. And our controller, who is not here, has put in procedures that the computer doesn't allow it anymore. If there's not money in the budget, it stops it. They can't pay it. They can't do it if there's no money left in a particular account. However, we had, at the end of the year, $4,049,725 in cash. Now, I'm using what the State Board of Accounts and the rating agencies use. They look at, and they add this up as a total. So this is the figure we'll use going forward so that we can compare year to year going forward. They use the general fund, which is what most of the expenses come out of, and that's the all these council members know what the general fund is because they set that budget. The Public Safety Fire Fund, the Public Safety Police Fund, the Park Operating Fund, the Cemetery Fund, the Motor Vehicle Highway Fund, and the Local Road and Streets Fund. They add all those up, and this is what we determined, or what was given to us by, actually this was a report that was done by the prior administration that we just got copies of, and we added 2019 to it. It's one they had in 2018. But you can see we spent $2.8 million more last year of our cash than we brought in taxes. To go from
$6.8 million was the cash at the end of 2018 to $4 million was the cash
in all those accounts that I mentioned, those six or seven different accounts, spent $2.8 million. That trend is not very good because it's actually what? About $4.5 million over the last 2 years, overspending what wasn't tax revenue. They spent what was essentially your savings account. That's essentially what it was. We spent reserves we had in accounts to cover expenses. If you go back even further, you can see that that was the height back in, at the end of 2013, $11.5 million. So it's not a good figure. But I just wanted to explain that we do, it's not that we don't have any money in Muncie. We've got money. We had $4 million at the beginning of the year. It's just some of the accounts were off. We're not spending from the wrong accounts any longer. We're holding people accountable and departments accountable going forward. One of the things that we did since taking office, one of the things we did, one of the things that was done is, oh, let me go back. Nope, that's it. Jace is probably having a heart attack right now because I'm going back and forth and back and forth. But I have notes and I could do it word for word, but that's not my typical style. So you expect to be here for 2 or 3 hours. One of the things that we did is to take advantage of lower rates. We refinanced the city and the council, and I was on the council, was involved in this, but we refinanced some bonds back in December. They closed December 20th of 2019. When this happened, there we go. When this happened, I've already talked about how we had 18 negative accounts, but our bond rating came back at BBB-. Any bankers in here? BBB- is the lowest rating a city can receive without being a junk bond. That's not good. Because, and you heard in the introduction, I have written 3 books on credit scores. I've helped 14,000 people increase their scores. I'm very passionate about it. I don't like the credit scoring system. It keeps people down. So I'm very passionate about helping people with credit scores. The thing about the bond rating, it's like credit scores. If you have a high score, you get a low rate. And if you have a high bond rating, you get a low rate. As your bond rating goes down, your rate goes up, which means what for the taxpayers? You're paying higher interest rates. So that's how it works. So having a BBB, and if it goes to junk bond, you're in big trouble. The rates are really high. So we knew this was something we needed to work on. The other thing is they rated management because they not only does when you do this bond restructure, you have to go through this interview process. It's really a grueling process, and it was a 2-hour call and prep work and so many other things. But they came back with a BBB- rating. That's looking at the financials. And then they look at the management and the procedures, and they rated it as weak. And they said, and this is a quote from S&P, this weak warning will likely trigger a rating surveillance review in 2020, which means they're going to be all over our backs. So we knew we had to get control of this. C.S. Lewis, and I'm just going to give a quote from C.S. Lewis, you can't go back and change the beginning, but you can start where you are and change the ending. So what we are in the process of doing is changing the ending. So since we took over, we've made substantial progress, and I have to give credit to Trent. He's not here today. They're out of state, and I miss him, I tell you. But Trent Conway is a great controller. He communicates well. I think he communicates well with the council. He communicates well with the departments. He has a bachelor's and a master's from Ball State. He was an assistant controller for a private firm, and he was a great hire. And I did not know him prior to the interview process. One of the promises I made, and it's caused me some friction on people who maybe helped on the campaign, but one of the promises I made is I was going to put the best people I could find in positions. I was not going to hire buddies, friends, or people for other reasons. And And there were, we have, I think there were 11 people on the panel this morning. Six of them I did not know before the interview process. So I believe I've kept that promise. And it's paying off. Trent was a great hire. But we went from 18 accounts negative. Oh, I guess I'm supposed to be over here now. We have cut off of that 3.3 million. We have already reduced it in 2 months. This is through February 28th numbers, or February 29th numbers. So in 2 months, we have reduced $775,458 off of that 3.3 negative. Off of those accounts that were negative, we've already put that much back. And we just recently, Brian just recently submitted for the Crossroads grant money. So that's another $500,000 coming back. So we're going to do this, and we're going to make it happen, and we're not going to have triple B minus ratings going forward. Well, you'll hear something soon. That's our plan. But I will tell you, I'm very, very proud of Trent and everybody in the finance department. They have just done tremendous work. And the department heads. In the very first meeting, I said, we're going to live within our budgets, period. We have to, because we've got some challenges. And they've all been very good about it. Very good about it. Now, you're probably going to hear some more about ratings, because being a 30-year banker, I know that we're in the process of looking into how much we can reduce our rate on the bonds that were just closed in December. Now, keep in mind, we are not extending any terms. So if they were to be paid off in 11 years, they're still going to be paid off in 11 years. But what we're doing is we're looking at, can we refinance these, cover the cost of the refinance through the bond, and still save money? And we have two more that we're in the process of doing, and we're looking at a couple others. So even some that were done recently, we think we can save some funds for the city, which I'll just give an example. We've got a parks bond. Carl and I and the parks board has approved it. The council last year approved looking at it, but we went ahead and moved forward with it. So we've got a parks bond that we're in the process of. We sign it Monday, but they had to go through this whole rating process with us. And we did this about a week and a half ago. We did a prep call, which was about an hour and a half, because I had never been through an S&P rating conference call before. And then the actual call was about 2 hours, and they asked everything under the sun. But mainly they're looking at our financials, and they're looking at what are we doing. They were so pleased with our the procedures that we've put in place that we're still triple B minus. So we're still just one spot above. But they changed the management rating to stable. Now, some of you may not think... some may not think that it's a big deal to go from weak to stable, but it signals something. It signals that a tide is turning and that we're taking special attention to make sure that going forward, we want to move that triple B minus to triple B and then to double B minus and then double B. You know, we want to improve that, and we'd love to get into the A's because that's where you get the best rates. But by doing this park bond, we're going to say, what was it, Carl? It's not much, but it's $100,000. Is what we're going to save over the 8 years or so that are left on the park. I don't remember exactly how many years, but it was about $100,000 is what we're saving on that one. But that's money that will go back into the parks. We're not borrowing any more money. We're not extending any term. So when I say refinance, we're not borrowing more. We're borrowing exactly what we have. But that's $100,000 that's going to be in the parks budget. And you're going to find parks are going to be a much bigger focus in my administration. And that's $100,000. The way I look at it, that's $100,000. We have another one that has to do with the convention center parking garage. And that one also closes Monday. Now, that's a collaboration of multiple. And my understanding is, I don't know that anybody's here from the county, but there's multiple entities involved in that particular bond. but it's supposed to save us $344,000 off over the next 16 years. Is it a small amount per year? Maybe. Depends on how you look at it. But it's $344,000 that's not going to be going toward interest. It's going to be going toward the other things that we in the city need to do to make our city better. So that also gets signed on Monday. And there are other entities involved in that. There are four different entities involved in that particular loan. And really, the city was just a co-signer. But the other thing that we did on that is, so far, since 2014, we had not paid 1 cent of principal. It had been interest only. Effective immediately. Effective Monday, we're paying principal. And so we're starting to pay principal because we want to pay that down. I have a new grandbaby coming. And I want to make sure that that grandbaby is not saddled with the $16 million that are involved in that particular financing. So we're starting to pay principal. Now, it's going to come out of the edit, but that it's important. And in my mind, that's the way we want to do it, because I want to set this up to where for decades the city of Muncie is in a better financial position. I won't be here decades from now. In this position, I might be out there, but I've got to do things that help set us up for success in the future. And that's what we're doing. We have another big challenge in Muncie. We have a few, but we've got so many positives. Oh, well, we'll start with this. Scott Fadness, the mayor of Fishers, came in and he made this quote: "It won't be easy, but brighter days are ahead in Muncie," and that's really the focus. We do have brighter days are ahead in Muncie going forward, and those brighter days start with getting the finances on track. And I think my banking background and the hiring of an actual accountant as a controller, that helps get our finances on track. And so brighter days are coming, ladies and gentlemen. Now, maybe you're clapping for that particular comment, or are you clapping for the picture of the mall? This is a major challenge that we're faced with. And the reason this is such a big deal, and many of you know this, some of you who consider it, the second largest assessed value that we have in the city of Muncie is the Muncie Mall. $30,725,300 in assessed value. What does that mean to our city's budget, our public safety budget, our library budget, our school system budget? The Muncie Mall is very important to us, folks. Very important. Now, I'm going to go through these negatives because I did a lot of research. These are as close as I can get. I tried to take out the seasonal ins and outs. There's a lot of seasonal ins and outs, but there have been 14 mall store closures. The Macy's is not closed, but it's practically there. I can't force myself to go in. I don't care how good the deals are. I can't do it. And I have not. I have not gone into Macy's. But the Mexican restaurant, K Jewelers, moved to another location, still in the mall area. But that says something about the Muncie economy that they didn't leave. But we'll get into that later. Yankee Candle moved. I'll talk about that in a second. Carter's Hot Dogs. But all these others on the other side, these were not Muncie folks. They closed all of their locations. And this is the important part that I want everyone to understand. Our mall is not dead. Let me show you what I've done. I'll probably tell you first. I have met with the local mall management since I took office multiple times. I've been in there offering help, gathering data, trying to figure out what's going on. And I've also met with their regional management. Part of the problem with our Muncie Mall is we have marketing in how many days a week? Just a guess. One. So 4 days a week or 6 days a week, because the mall's open 7 days, there's nobody in there who does a thing about marketing at the Muncie Mall. We have leasing agents in. How many days a week? Just a guess. One. So that means 6 days a week, if somebody calls and says, I'm interested, or I'd like information, or how much is the rent, or I saw this space, they have to wait till the following Monday. Now, I've been in sales long enough to understand that if I called the Muncie Mall and I'm interested in expanding, I'm probably also going to call the Kokomo Markland Mall. I'll probably call some other malls. If Muncie's not getting back with you for 6 or 7 days, the deal could be done. I shared my displeasure with them about that, but I also offered to help. And so they emailed me a list of companies that had an interest in Muncie. They said, we don't know what's happened with them. And I started making phone calls, but I'm offering whatever I can. But my challenge is that Washington Prime is the owner of that mall. I can't make any deals. I'm not putting in public money. But I was willing and did make phone calls on behalf of the Muncie Mall because I understand what would happen to our city finances, our debt payments, our public safety, our schools, if that $30 million went away, that $30 million in assessed value. And some of you who know how it works, it's 1% for what? If you own your home, property tax, 2% if it's a rental, how much is it if it's a commercial enterprise? Exactly. Figure that up. What is 3% of $30 million? It's a lot of money, and we can't afford for our schools, our libraries, and our city to be without that. Now, I can't perform miracles because I don't own it. I don't have any, and I don't intend for the city to buy it. But I'm here to help, and that's what I offered them. And I made a bunch of phone calls. One thing I do know, and I'm clearly not a retail expert, but I do know that too much debt destroys finances, destroys lives. Too much debt can destroy families. Too much debt destroys businesses, and too much debt is what is destroying the Muncie Mall. There was recently an article in the Muncie paper. They owe, what was it, $33 or $34 million? How much is the assessed value? So just like when 2007 hit, if you remember 2007, there were a lot of people, not as many in Indiana, but in some of the areas where they had had really high appreciation and they maxed out their debt on particular properties and then the value didn't keep up and people, what, gave their properties back. Now, I am telling you that the best thing that could ever happen for Muncie, and Sherry, I will take you out for dinner and we will celebrate, is for them to give that back to the bank. Because here's why. I'm going to skip through this. This is all many stores have expanded. Many stores are new. Would Panera Bread move their location into the mall parking lot if they didn't look into the value of the mall and the long-term viability of the mall? I think they're a pretty smart company. I think they might have picked somewhere else, but they moved there. They understand that the mall is not dead. The big box retailers are struggling. So let me just tell you what I'm going to do, what I've got here. I personally went and visited all 42 stores that are operating. Four of them said, we really had a terrible 2019 and we're concerned. Four. I visited how many, Brad? 42. Four said we had a terrible 2019. Two of them, I never was able to talk to management, and the salespeople didn't know the numbers, and that's a problem that their management should be sharing with their people so that they know the numbers. But two of them I wasn't able to talk to, but I talked to the other 36, and they had great results. There are many, many, many stores doing very well in there. One of them said they had the best December in 2019 that they have ever had at the Muncie Mall. They've been there over 10 years. Their best December ever. The mall is not closing, ladies and gentlemen. It's not. It won't. they had their best. Another one said we were 200,000 higher in 2019 than we were in 2018. Another one said we were 40,000 higher in January of 2020, because I stopped by in February with this particular one, and than we were in January of 2019. 40,000 more in sales. One of them said they are number one in their region, and it's a multi-state region. Four of them said they were in the top three in their region. And again, it's a large region, three of those stores in their region. And dozens of them said, we're in the top third. We feel like we're safe. Here's what their problem was. Even when customers came in and bought items, they would say, is the mall closing? Is the mall closing? Is the mall closing? I assured them that it's not going to close. Being a banker, I know what's going to happen. The mall, Washington Prime, who owns it, is going to give it back to the bank. The bank is going to do exactly what I just did. Remember, 30-some years in banking, I know what the bank's going to do. They're going to do exactly what I just did. They're going to go and they're going to say, huh, we talked to all 42 that are in there, plus we have all these other tenants out just outside. They're doing really well. They're going to keep it open. They're going to have the tenants pay rent to the bank, and the bank is going to, as quickly as possible, find a source to buy the mall. Now, let me give you a little story. I don't know how many of you have any of you ever been to the Elkhart Concord Mall? Hey, we've got a hand. We have one. Oh, we've got two, a couple. So that's another mall similar to ours, built roughly the same time, but that has been struggling. I'm going to read this to you. The Concord Mall will soon have new owners. Caprock Real Estate in Chicago, a Chicago-based real estate firm, said that they are taking over. It was finalized February 6th. And I'm just going to read you what Caprock said. In a phone call Wednesday, the firm has big plans for the mall, including bringing in a 20,000 square foot tenant, converting unused resale space to office space. There are no plans to close the mall. Their firm hopes to clean up the mall's image, attract new tenants, and increase overall traffic to the shopping center. Now, when I said I know what's going to happen, the bank is going to take that back. They're going to put this on the market. They'll sell it for the most they can, but it's not going to be anywhere near $34 million. But they're going to find owners that see value in 36 tenants that are doing well. And those 36 that are doing well, when companies are involved in closing down stores, they don't pick the ones that are in the top third. They're looking at the bottom third as ones they close. 36 of those are firm, good companies. I would strongly urge everyone in this room to do everything in their power to reacquaint yourself with those tenants in that mall. Go to Route 21. Well, that's kind of, I don't know if we have enough young people for that. Bath and Body Works spent a lot of money remodeling their store, and they're really what knocked Yankee Candle out. So many people now buy those candles at Bath and Body Works that Yankee Candle said, we're struggling to keep up. So that's really what happened there with Yankee Candle. Buckle, they nearly doubled the size of their location because they've been doing so well. And Country Charm, bless their hearts. Country Charm. Is Alan here? No. Country Charm, even after Macy's announcement, and even through all this turmoil, and they are one I stopped in and talked to, but even after all that, they are so confident in that mall that they renewed their lease. Go visit Country Charm, please. It won't be easy, but brighter days are ahead in Muncie with our finances and with our retail. Believe me, brighter days are ahead. Now, we do have some other issues. Oh, not as big of a groan as I thought. Roads and streets. I will tell you that we had to back out of some opportunities to pave because we just didn't have the money. You know we're negative 1.9. We hope to get reimbursed on some of that. I mean, we're trying to work it all out. We're going to go back and do some of those. But I will tell you that we have, with other departments, assistance, and some other grant programs, well, I'll go ahead and touch on this. In the 5 years from 2012 to 2016, we paved 145 miles of roads, which is 29 miles per year. The next 2 years we paved, in 2017 and 18, we paved 28.8 miles, which is 14 per year. And in 2019, according to the county site that we used for this, only 1 mile. I think part of those were done in February and at the end of 2018, and they finished the sidewalks in 2019. So that's, I think they show in the 2018 numbers. But we didn't take care of our neighborhood streets. So what we have put together, we do have money. We've put together funds to do these 9 streets. So we're doing 7th from Batavia to Gilman. They're all on here. I can point them. Well, I'll let you guys. They're on there. Main from McKinley to Calvert. 13th from Porter to Rochester, which is by Thomas Park. Utica from 8th Memorial, which is over by the Eagles. Garnett, way on the east side from Wade to the Dead End. High Street, this was one of my major priorities, from Willard to Memorial. Yeah, that was an embarrassing street. It really was. Charles from Hackley East to the Dead End. And I know it's a dead end, but it deserves to have a decent street. It's horrible over there. Graceland from Jackson to Maine, and Monroe from Gilbert to Washington. So we've put that money together. You can thank, a lot of people, because we're using some community development. We're using a lot of different ways to make this happen, and some cost savings that we've put in place. But we've got some streets that are going to be covered, and we're excited about that. Now, it's time for Brian, our city engineer. This was one of the great hires. I did not know him before this whole process started, but he has done such a wonderful job, and he's got this portal put together. He's got all those. He's now working on 2020 stuff and 2021 and going forward. So this is about a 7-minute video on how to do the potholes and other street issues.
Hi, my name is Brian Stevens-Hotop. I'm the city engineer for the city of Muncie. Today I wanted to go over a new tool that the city of Muncie, in working with Delaware County, has rolled out. It's a portal for reporting street problems within the city, and it's a computer-based tool that can be used from a desktop as well as a mobile device. So the first thing you'll see on the Muncie Street Problem Reporting Hub is the actual button to get to the form to submit a street problem. Once you click that button, you'll be redirected to a new tab that shows you the form with our information that we need to collect in order to try and address the problem. So the first item is going to be the type of problem that you're trying to report. So you'll see that even though the potholes have gotten a lot of attention, there's a lot of different types of problems that you can report. These are all things that we try to address within the street department, or in some cases, we try to let other departments or other utilities know of the problem so that we can help try and address all those issues throughout the city. The details section, any type of information that can help us understand the location, you know, whether it's a specific corner or an intersection, that's appreciated. It helps make sure that our crews are able to find the problem more easily and address the problem timely. So we'll go ahead and put something in here. Then under name, this is something where we'd like to collect the name of people doing the reporting so that we can try and follow up with you and make sure that if we have questions, we know who to ask to or who we need to reach out to. The phone number, again, that's something that is easier for us to try and follow up. If we have a crew out there and they're not seeing the problem, or we're trying to get a better understanding of what's going on, or if there's a lot of people that are reporting a similar problem, so that we can try to just, I think, provide better follow-up with the community. An email, that's one of our preferred ways of providing status updates for a project. So if it's in progress or once it's been completed, we'll try and let people that submitted a problem know that that project has been identified and completed. The severity of a problem is really where we're trying to help us understand the priority. So in some cases, it's a pothole, it's something that gets on our list, we try and get to it timely. But if there's something that you feel is a true road hazard or something that's going to impact public safety, we'd ask that you try and identify the severity of that. So oftentimes a pothole might be something that's minor. If it's something where there's a real risk to human health, we'd ask you to put severe. Under status, if you are filling out the form, we'd like you to hit submitted. There's other statuses within that dropdown that we use internally to let us know where we are in the process of addressing those problems. Adding a photo from a desktop, if you have a photo that you've saved, you know, something that you've downloaded to your desktop, that's where you'd want to select that file. If it's from a mobile device, it's something that you could go ahead and take a picture and load that picture from your location so that we have a record of what we're trying to identify or what we're looking for when we send a crew out. For the location, if you have a mobile device, you can hit the Locate Me button, which will identify your location based on the phone's GPS coordinates. If you're at a specific address, whether that's a residence or a business, that's something that we can use to help identify where a problem is. Or if you just want to use the location from a map, you can zoom in to the map, identify the intersection. If you can try to be specific as far as where you think that problem is occurring, if it's on the northwest corner or if it's in between two blocks, you know, go ahead and actually put it where you think that problem is identified, and a marker will show up, which then will, and that marker can be moved or dragged as you need to. So once you feel good about the location of the problem, you can scroll further down under complete form, hit submit entry. Once you hit complete the form, we will receive the report of that problem. At that point, we'll start putting a ticket together for our crews to address those problems, and then we will also be able to follow up with you once we've completed the problem. Other items that can be viewed on the Street Problem Reporting Hub is a map that shows all the locations of reported problems. So if you view the map, there's an interactive map that shows all the different locations. It shows whether it's in progress. It identifies the severity of a problem. If you've noticed something that is something you would want to report, you could potentially see if it's already been reported and we're working on it. Another item that's available is the pothole and report analysis map. When you open that map, you can see problems that we've already repaired or problems that have been addressed. And this is specifically looking at problems fixed within the last 7 days. So you can see that our crews are out there trying to work through the backlog of problems that have been reported to the city. Finally, at the bottom of the hub, there's a little more information about learning about potholes, the causes, some safety advice that we suggest for our crews when we're out there trying to give them some space, going slow when crews are out working, and also just a reminder to help give us some time to address these problems, as there are a lot that get reported to us, and it takes some time for all of our crews to be out there and repair those. That completes my overview of the Street Problem Reporting Hub. And if you have any further questions, I hope you reach out to the Street Department and myself.
Great job, Brian. Let's move to another department. Muncie Animal Shelter. We clearly have a roof issue. It's causing issues inside. I was able to Like I said, I have $21,000. So I went ahead and I ordered the start of that work. We need the community's help. So what we've done is we've gone to the Community Foundation, and we have set up a Muncie Animal Shelter Roof Fund. And you can, if you can go to cfmin.org, you can specify that, and you can help participate in making sure we get that roof paid for. The other thing that we're doing to try and bring the public's bring it in, higher in the public's eye is I am running the Leprechaun Leap. It's a week from today, and that is I'm running the 10K portion. On March 14th, it starts at 10 a.m. at, oh, I almost said Scotty's, at Roots. And I will be pushing a dog, weather permitting, I will be pushing in a stroller a dog that Ethan provides me just to raise awareness. So anything that you can do to get people to, you know, a couple dollars makes a difference. We're just trying to figure out how do we manage this. The maintenance on the maintenance that was budgeted for that building was $5,000, and that was spent in the first couple of weeks. The building has some challenges, but the roof being the cause of many of those challenges, I said we have to fix the roof completely. And so we contracted with a firm to do it. We'll come up with it if we don't raise enough money. But please, please, please consider helping the animal shelter. They do great work. It is a no-kill shelter. We want to keep it that way. And Ethan, I appreciate everything that you're doing out there. So I'm going to give you a round of applause. So again, it will not be easy, but brighter days are ahead in Muncie. And that's with our finances. That is with our mall and other retail. That goes with our streets and with our animal shelter. We'll keep moving. There are still some additional challenges. What we found is that there were a lot of procedures that just weren't being followed, primarily in the HR area. And so one of the great things about Nancy, who couldn't be here today, is she is strict. So that's one of the reasons I like having her. So we're requiring departments to do it the right way. And so we're working on those things. For those of you who were part of the panel, you heard some of the challenges that our human rights department hears. And apparently they get lots of communication, right? You have a lot of people having trouble of being discriminated against, and primarily in housing. And we need for that to end. And so we appreciate the work that Yvonne, that you do and your department does. The Muncie Sanitary District, they have worked well with us. I met with a Sanitary District employer yesterday on something we're coordinating on some equipment. So I know that here's my only challenge is that in 2013, or 2000, I'm sorry, 2012, whenever it was, when former Mayor Tyler took office, he hired a city engineer and put them on the board. That's what the law states. I have no challenge with what the sanitary district employees are doing. But I don't understand why a city engineer who has done this great work is not placed on that board, and the state statute says the city engineer is on the board. The others are appointed by the executive. That board was unwilling to step down, and we had to go other directions. But it has nothing to do with the sanitary district not working with us. It has nothing to do with any of the employees. It has to do with what the state law says, period. So that's the issue, the only issue with the sanitary district. Delaware County EMS, they have told us, we have found out that they're pulling out of all the Ball State events, so I'm thankful to Chief David Miller that we're covering those events. So we immediately met with Ball State. We found out what events they have, and we're making sure that we have the proper EMS coverage at those events. That was a little bit of a surprise to us, but we're happy to do it. So I appreciate your efforts on that. Another thing that, how many of you have driven down South Madison? Oh, around 29th Street. There is an ugly, vacant hotel. And about a week and a half ago, I guess it's been about a week and a half, Gretchen Cheeseman, our community development director, and Steve Selvey came into my office and they shut the door and I thought, oh, this isn't good. But they came in and said, we want to tear that thing down and we think we can pull it off, but we're short money. Now, why? Well, no. So I didn't say no because I want that thing gone as well. So since I said, well, how soon do I have to pay this? Because I knew I had $21,000 in the edit funds. And they said, well, it's not going to happen right away. And I said, then do it. Whatever you need between the three departments, they're taking some of their funds, allocating it to make sure that eyesore disappears from the south side. And I appreciate both of you and what you're doing. There you go, Ralph. So that will be gone. So is that enough challenges? Let's go to some things that are coming. So here's what, we've been in office 67 days. So as I already mentioned, we've worked with the negative accounts. We've gone from 3.3 million negative to 2.5. We had, I submitted to the council while I was still a council member in 2019, and it was brought up in the January and then approved in the February meeting, Ordinance 3-20. And what that does is it just puts in some additional procedures that must be followed within the departments when purchasing items over $5,000. Not a big deal, but it slows down the process. And what I like about this, and thank you to the council that voted for it unanimously, by the way, but thank you to the council because that solves the problem for decades on. Unless a council goes in and says, nah, let them do what they want. And I don't think a council will do that in the future. So thank you to the council, and that's why I'm excited about 3-20. We've implemented some changes in some of the vehicle, what we'll call sharing. We've already implemented this in the street department. And we had a need for some vehicles, and we had several take-home vehicles. And they're no longer take-home vehicles. They're now city vehicles. We just felt like we had to do that. But that's the type of thing that we're doing under the radar. I'm telling you now, but we did this before. I mean, we're just now letting you know that these are the type of steps that we're taking to try and make the city finances good for long term. We've also instituted we have some planned scheduled purchases so that going forward, we're not always needing to buy 25 vehicles at once for the police department or something. We're going to start doing them on a regular basis, and that's all part of the budgeting process. And I have met with all three of the council finance committee members, but I meet with them and we're going over this. You're going to get your budget early this year. It's going to be my budget. You guys pick it apart. That's okay. But it'll be my budget. And then you pick what you like, what you don't like. We work through it. We try and come up with adjustments. But we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to start planning for vehicle replacement. We're going to start planning for maintenance. And we're going to take care of what we've spent money on. So Aaron Clark and Richard Ivey and Jeff Robinson. So thank you for the meetings that you've been involved in so far. For that. The Muncie Police Department, they're sitting here on the front row. In fact, they're wearing the same outfits that they're in the picture. That's probably a little embarrassing, guys. I was careful because I saw what the first slide was. It was my red tie, so I'm not wearing the same tie. But no, they're not. They don't have everything on. But I'm really proud of some of the things that they've accomplished. These two have both been, they're not sitting behind a desk being chief and deputy chief. They have both been running night shift runs, we're short officers, and they're in the hiring process now. But they're out doing the midnight shift to help. And I appreciate that. And I'm sure the other officers appreciate that. But they've stepped up the training, and they've taken it from big group trainings to smaller trainings, almost individual. And the officers have really appreciated that, because sometimes when you're a big, tough policeman, this is an assumption on my part. When you're a big, tough policeman, you don't want to say, I don't know how that works, or I don't get that, or maybe, I don't know. But in a smaller group, you might say, can we go through that again one more time so I make sure I get it? But this smaller group training with almost individual attention is really making a difference. And we're focusing on how to de-escalate situations. And so we need this extra training, and I appreciate what both of you are doing to lead that forward. Thank you so much. Well, Brian stole my thunder on this. But by working with other agencies, primarily with MITS, we've got $1 million in 2021 that we're going to be able to use for sidewalks. Now, it has to be sidewalks. It can be repairs. But the thing I told Brian, I said, I just want to make sure everything we're doing is ADA compliant, and make sure we can solve that problem for future decades. So that's what our goal is. We have not started looking at, because we've got a commission that helps in the ADA area. We haven't met with that commission to get their input. But what I thought we might start with is we might start around the schools and work our way out, and the libraries and work our way out, and maybe downtown and work our way out. We just want to solve every sidewalk issue, starting around our schools and working our way out, because we have $1 million and it's not coming from us. It's a grant. So Brian and MITS and some other agencies are involved in that, and we greatly appreciate that. I mean, we are scrambling for funds to try and do the right thing. That's one that I'm really excited about. We are also, we were able to put back on the list one that we had to take off the list. But we've got Centennial from Elgin to Shirey is going back on. We've got some intersection improvements. There's some real safety issues on that one at Riverside and Jackson. And then Wheeling's already paid for. It's part of that negative street fund, and it'll be completed in November of 2020. So I thank former Mayor Tyler for having that. I mean, that's going to be a nice addition to our city. And so thank him for us having that. We also are, we've come up with the way to buy 3 new salt trucks. It was either one or two that were 1995 and one that was 1999. And effective as soon as we get these new ones in place, we won't have any of those because you can't get parts. That's been the challenge. We're having a hard time repairing the vehicles. They have 13 salt trucks. They have 13 trucks at the street department. And what my goal is in the budget going forward, every year we're going to replace one. Now, we're doing 3 this year because we have some that were extra old, but we're going to replace one. So the oldest truck going forward in this city should be 13 years. If they continue to keep that in the budget, one truck every year, one truck, and you just roll the others off. That's the way you solve problems for long term, and that's what we're doing. So thank you, Brian, and we're working on doing that. The other things we've done, and by the way, I hate to tell this to the council because they'll go look it up, but there was actually an ordinance that required inventories. We did an inventory throughout all of the city departments, we didn't do it because it was an ordinance that required it, but there is a city ordinance that was passed that does require it, so if we don't do it next year, you guys can get on our backs. We will do it. But we did inventory to know where we stand. We wanted to know what do we have, what can we move from one to another. And we've had departments take items. You know, that we don't want to buy things that we don't need. If other departments have an item, we want them to be able to use that within the city. We felt like that was good stewardship of the money. We do have two of the three bids. We may have a third. I don't know. I've been kind of out this week. But we're putting in a new website. The goals that we want for that particular website is, I'm sorry, I'd rather just talk and wing it. But the website, we want it to be functional for the public and functional for us. And so we want it to allow all documents to be available, all finances passed to be available, the minutes. But we also want services and payment options for the clerk's office, for example. We want to make all that 100% easy to manage on the website. So we've got two of the three bids in. We're reviewing that, so we hope to have a new website here shortly. And then one other thing that's spearheaded by our building commissioner, Steve Selvey, he wants to automate, and we're 95% there, automating everything in the building commissioner's office so that a contractor to build a house can go online, submit the application, print out their permit, pay their bill. Actually, we should make them pay the bill first, then print out the permit. Okay, pay their bill, then print out the permit, and never even have to come into the office. The advantages of that is what? Well, it makes us more efficient. It's easier for us to do, and we can reassign those people to something else and then not replace somewhere else if we can pull that type of thing off. So, but it's about 95% complete. You're working with IT. And I appreciate your efforts, Steve, on that. I think that will be a great item for us. And then we're not there yet. There's been so many other more pressing priorities that we've dealt with, but we're going to have a single procurement system to where all the purchasing for all departments is done in one area, and we feel like we can get better pricing. We can do more timely financing if need be. It just makes sense. Now, that's not in place yet, but it's something that we're certainly working toward, and we'll get there. So it won't be easy, but brighter days are what? They're ahead in Muncie. Brighter days for our finances, for our mall and retail, for our streets, for our animal shelter, for our operational procedures. All those are going to have brighter days ahead. Some upcoming things. So here's some things that we have coming, and I'm real excited about some of these. Oh, we're improving Cooley Park. If you look at the map of our parks, there are so many young kids around this park. And so we've worked with councilperson Ralph Smith. We've worked with some agencies. But we've been doing a lot of work, and we're going to do these things in Cooley Park. We've already submitted a grant, and I believe it appears to be going well. We'll put it that way. But we're going to improve those basketball courts. We're going to add a walking path. We're going to do improvements to the restroom facilities and the parking lot, and all that will be coming from a grant. Edit funds next year are going to put in a splash pad. That is going to happen. So those South Side kids will have a place to go on the South Side for a splash pad along with these improvements. Now, I will also add to that. Chandra, are you here? There she is. Okay. We are already scheduled. I scheduled this a couple weeks ago. We're already on the schedule to present. I didn't tell you what it was about, but we're already on the schedule to present at the Southside Neighborhood Association meeting at Southside Middle School on Tuesday, March 24th at 5:30 p.m. So we want as many people there as possible. We want to share what we have in mind, but we want the input. And you can, and if the neighborhood says no, we don't want this or we want that, there's plenty of adjustments we can do. But that's one of the things that we want to talk about. So get people there. This is about Cooley and the improvements to a Southside neighborhood park. So get them there. Haltman. We already had the neighborhood meeting on Haltman Pool. It was this past, just been about a couple weeks, as it was the last week of February, I believe. And there were a lot of people there. We filled up, it was a full meeting. I won't say we filled up the gymnasium, but we got a lot of input. Carl was there. Dustin was there. And were you there for that? No. Aaron, you came to that one. So there were council members. We got input. And we know what that neighborhood wants. And we're working with Ball State on that. They're putting together some ideas. And in 2021, we expect for them to go through. What I noticed, and I went ahead and put it on there, but most, there was one of those, it's like the MAP events, Monthly Action Plan, where everybody writes down ideas and then you go and you put the dots. Most people wanted a splash pad in that area. The pool is not going to be there. That is not something that we can financially do, but I do think that we can have another splash pad there. The other thing that, and I appreciate your efforts, BJ. Tui Pool has a splash pad, but it has not been left open outside of the pool hours. This summer, whenever the weather is appropriate, we're going to open that up. It's fenced off now. During pool hours, it will be fenced off, and you have to be in, you have to pay and come in and do the pool, and then you can go over to the splash pad. But outside pool hours, there's a fence, and we're going to close that. We're going to keep that closed, but we're going to open it to the public so people on that area of town can come in and utilize that, because it's still what? Warm, hot at 7 p.m., 8 p.m. And kids want a place to go, and I want us to provide it. So Carl and I have worked hard on this and some of the other initiatives here on the parks, but we're going to have the Tui Pool splash pad will be open even when the pool is closed, and it will be free when the pool is closed. So we felt like that was important. It's a quality of life issue. It's there. It's already paid for. We need to make it available to the public, and that's what we're going to do. Did quite a bit of communication with Anitra on this. There's some additions that are coming to Heekin Park and some other things coming to Heekin Park. So we've tried to incorporate her opinions. I haven't gotten back with you yet to find out what the Neighborhood Association said, because I wasn't able to go to that particular meeting. But we'd like to know. But there's some nice additions coming to Heekin Park as well. I did, you know, it's kind of easy to commit the money when you don't have to write it at that time. But I did commit $50,000 of the edit funds to make sure that that project goes through. So Heekin's going to have some additions as well. We've got, we've had some communication on Gilbert Park, a little small park that, and so we're going to do some enhancements there, not very expensive. I think we're just going to do them through the parks budget. Westside Park, there's some things that we have in mind. It's way too early to say what we have in mind, but we've been talking with people about it and trying to put it together and come up with a package on how to finance it. So again, we're looking for all sources that we can. So that's for Westside. And McCullough. I'll tell you what, I'm so excited. We have a huge project that we may be able to do in McCullough Park. We don't have it financed yet. We don't have the okay yet. But once we have that, we want to get with the Neighborhood Association, and then we can tweak it to make it fit. But it's substantial, and it's really exciting what could happen if we can put together that package to make it finance. But my point is, we're looking at all of our neighborhood parks. And as you know, I've been a neighborhood proponent. I understand that your neighborhoods being successful and keeping residents and growing residents is what helps Muncie be successful. So we're doing everything that we can think of to come up with the funding sources and the ways to maneuver around or work between departments to make the repairs that we feel are necessary and the adjustments that we feel are necessary to improve the quality of life in Muncie. So, we have received yesterday the grant that can pay for improvements to Dave's Alley. So now that we have the money, these are some of the things we had in mind. So now we're going to start putting this together and out with the other people who are involved. We didn't want to come out until we had the money. We don't know exactly what we're going to do, but we've put together the money. And what that some of that that we thought, pillars and lighting, archways, a welcoming environment to and from the parking lot, increased safety. It's a way to welcome visitors downtown. We want it to be ADA compliant again. And we were hoping for some planning. So I'll be getting with downtown development, and we'll start putting together, and Marta, and we'll start putting together what we can actually do. But we got a grant yesterday. So we're seeking everywhere we can to make things happen. Included in that grant, because it was a two-area thing, is what I call a Cannon Commons Alley. This is that area that goes from Charles between the two buildings down to Cannon Commons. And so what we're looking to do, and we have money now to do it, so we'll start communicating and figuring out what do the business owners and so forth need. We want to kind of turn that into a community gathering space. We want to make it more welcoming. We are looking at having gated on both sides and permanent lighting, planter boxes. And again, we want it to be ADA compliant, but we'll start bringing in the core of people who need to help us design this now that we know that we got the funding. And thank you, Dustin, for all your work on that. Okay. White River Lofts. Do any of you know that we're building apartments downtown? So a few. Okay. That's a picture of the building. It's going to be 55 luxury units. There's 2,000 square feet of retail space on the bottom floor right by the river that they're looking at doing. A couple of things about this. This is David Smith's. I told him this is your main responsibility right now. He's doing other things, but I just need to make sure all this is going well. This is something we've taken over from the previous administration, so it's not something that we created, but we have to help make it a reality, and that's what we're doing. There's a bigger picture. So we should have. They have already. On Thursday, they received their bids. It's WS Properties out of Bloomington. So if they have built many of the buildings around Bloomington, Indiana, and the IU campus. They've done a few in Fishers, but a very good company. David's been involved in regular weekly with Vicky. We've and others, but we've had some community partners. We've involved utilities, just making sure that the whole project is moving forward. But it's pretty exciting. And I think, Vicky, you sent out a little press release to some businesses stating that this was on its way. And there was such a response that WS is looking to see if they can do a phase two as well. So who knows? Who knows down the road? But this is going to be a really nice project. And the other thing that's kind of attached to it, we're building... part of this financing that was already done, and if you go over there, you can see parts of it, but we're doing the river on this side as well, this side of the river, so the south side of the river. It's already, the Greenway, the White River Greenway is already on the north side of the river, but we've started that process, and we're going to have a commons area, and we're going to have artwork in there, and a gathering place, and it'll be right on the river. The apartments will be here. That commons area will be here, and we have a restaurant. That it looks like I think David and Vicky sent out an exclusive right to write exclusive right to negotiate. So we can't talk to other restaurant companies because they are so interested in doing it. So it's not something that we have here in town. And so if that all works out, that will be great. If not, I think that the interest is such that we should be able to accomplish something. So there'll be a restaurant as part of that project as well. And we should have a groundbreaking on these apartments sometime in the next 10 days. So again, they got their bids in, and they're in the process of setting up a groundbreaking. Some additional things that we have in mind. We want to make sure that we've got, we want things to be well lit. We want the image to be good. We want to increase the overall ADA compliance throughout the whole city. And I'm hoping with this $1 million on sidewalks that that starts that project and we can complete it. And then we also have, and I would say that probably in the month of April, we will have a meeting with the neighbors around store, the former store site, and I think we've got something in mind there. But we want to get their input before we move things forward. You know, Jeff's been involved in that, and David's involved in that, and I appreciate your guys' efforts and input. But probably be in April for that neighborhood, so we'll put something together and do something really positive there. Pollinator fields. We've got a couple parks kind of in mind. I'd really love to see butterflies and endangered birds and species have a place to go. So we're kind of looking at it. We're way in the beginning stages, and there'll be others that will engage to move this forward. But we really want to take some of our land and utilize it in a way that can last for a long time. And we're also seeking out ways that we can do a tree farm. We'd like to. It's not something that's going to happen this year, but I think if we can get this accomplished, and the one site that we have in mind, we thought we could do about 1,300 trees. Those trees would then be available to go plant. And we're not paying for them. And it looked like we would save about $652,000 if we would set up this farm. And we have a lot of public land. So we're working on that. But that's something we would love to see happen. It just makes sense. You have space. It's not generating any revenue. Let's see what can we do that can make it a positive for us. So we're looking at that as well. So again, it sounds like a broken record, but it's true, folks. It won't be easy, but brighter days are ahead in Muncie. And that's with our finances, with our retail, with our streets, with our animal shelter, with our operational procedures, and with our parks. We've got a lot of positive things coming, and I appreciate the opportunity to be a part of it. Now, the reason Muncie will be successful is we have so many great assets. Our two largest employers are not going away. And one of them is Ball State University. So we can go through this, but I think people know the value of having Ball State University here. There's 22,541 students who come to Muncie, get to view Muncie, get to experience Muncie and spend some dollars in Muncie. But there's also 3,367 employees. And then there's all these other, you know, I can go over them, but nationally ranked in many, many areas. A huge university funded by the state with a very engaged president. And so I think we've got, that's a great asset for our community. And I guarantee you that Fishers wishes they had Ball State University, but they don't. Ball Hospital is another one. It's 1.2 million square feet. It's the number 5 regional hospital in Indiana, 360 beds, 2,931 employees, more than 300 physicians in over 50 specialties, but it's solid. It's something we can build upon. And that's what I like about our two biggest employers. We also have Ivy Tech. We're in that building now. They've completed their expansion. They're bringing 2,500 students downtown, but did you know that this Ivy Tech, the Muncie Ivy Tech, has more full-time students than any other Ivy Tech campus? Which is fantastic. For industry, we've got Accutech, which is moving their corporate headquarters downtown. I think they should be in by April. They're very, very close. That's 110 when they're completed. It should be about 110 very high-paying tech jobs. And they moved here because they wanted to be downtown, and they wanted to be in Muncie. We have the Ontario Technology Park. It has 967 people work in that park, in addition to the, what is it, about 4,000 that work downtown. It's one of only 24 state-certified parks, and you're going to see your mayor and our city brag about that a little bit more to others who come to town. It's something we don't mention enough. We have little tiny signs. Believe me, that's going to change, and we're going to brag about that, and we're going to look to expand it with more high-tech opportunities. Delaware Dynamics, just south of downtown in the South Central neighborhood, their expansion's nearly complete. In that, we saved 110 jobs by coming up with a financing package that didn't include the TIFs, no TIF district money, but we were able to work through that, and there were several of us, a few of us in this room that were part of those conversations. But it's very positive for the neighborhood. They have a nice campus, and it's something we can build upon, especially when we get next year and we have some money for some streets and some other things. Progress Rail, a great employer that we have here in town. Magna Powertrain is clearly they're the largest manufacturer that we have in our city. First Merchants is billion-dollar company. They have one of the largest banks headquartered in Indiana, and then, of course, Navient. So we've got a strong base of employers. We have a lot of positives going on, and I'm really excited about our future. Our people are one of our greatest assets. I'm so proud of this, that we are number one in philanthropy, according to the Sagamore Institute. And I love that we edged out Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, and Carmel. We are a very, very giving community. A very giving community. And I'm proud to call Muncie home. And even though when you're growing up, you live where your parents live, I didn't grow up here, but Muncie is my home, and I'm proud to be a part of Muncie. So there's several positives on there, but I'm just real proud of the people that we have. Partnering, I kind of talked about this during the panel session. So those of you who were part of the IDEA conference already have this, but we've been in numerous conversations with Delaware County, with Ball State, with Ivy Tech, the Regional Planning District, the Regional Partnership. I mean, we're communicating with everybody we can think of to look for sources and collaboration to make projects work in Muncie and Delaware County. And I think we're having great success with that. Okay. It is time for Muncie to take its place as the hub of East Central Indiana. There are many, many reasons why this needs to happen. Number one, we are by far the most populated area. Muncie has 68,000, Marion, Richmond, Newcastle, Yorktown's on there. But we are the population hub. We lead in employment. Muncie has 52,356 jobs. We don't have the lowest unemployment rate, but we do have the most jobs. Muncie leads in health service sales. Muncie is where people come to get well. And nearly as much as Richmond and Marion combined, but they do a good job as well. But Muncie is the leader by far, by hundreds of millions of dollars. More medical services happen in Muncie than anywhere else. Muncie leads in food and hospitality sales. People come here to eat. People come here to spend the night. I was at a meeting, I was at a conference yesterday at the Horizon, and there were 700 people. 700 people from all across the state here in Muncie. People come here to take advantage of what we have here because we have a great city. I know we have more than 66 restaurants, but if you go to TripAdvisor, that's what it said. It said 166. Richmond was second with 100. But people come here to eat. They come here to spend the night. They come here for retail sales. Muncie is the only place in East Central Indiana with two Walmarts, with a Target store, with an Ulta Beauty store, with 10 or more car dealerships, with a Buckle store, not somewhere I typically shop, but they're very popular, and soon an Old Navy. None of those, you can't get any of those in East Central Indiana, except for Muncie. People come here to shop. If you look at the numbers, based on, and this is the Census Department, 1,266,899,000 dollars in retail sales happen in Muncie alone. That's not Delaware County. That's Muncie alone. 1 billion with a B. 266 million. Retail is big. This is why I'm not worried about the mall. I want the mall to go back to the bank, and let's get somebody in with some vision who can turn that mall into something that it should be and could be. Retail. Muncie leads in education. Now, actually, Yorktown has more of this. The circle are those who are 25 and older. How many have a bachelor's degree or higher? And Yorktown is actually the leader there. We're second at 22.4. Richmond's third with 18.1. But that's the grads. But Muncie also has Ivy Tech. We've got a Division I school with Ball State. And then when you talk about our school system, Muncie Community Schools is a dual credit high school. The Career Center is a phenomenal piece that we have in our community and is training a workforce like nothing else in East Central Indiana. One of the things that I've done is I've reached out to them, and Tuesday of next week, I'm meeting at the Builders Association, and I'm taking the principal, a teacher, and six students who are part of the Buildings Trades Program at the Muncie Career Center to meet those builders. Because those builders are saying, we can't get young kids to get involved. I'm just trying to connect people. But the Muncie Area Career Center does a great job of training kids and students to be ready to fill our jobs that we have here. Muncie has created something, or the Muncie Community Schools, I didn't create this, Muncie Community Schools created something called the METN, which is the Muncie Engineering and Technology Network. It includes Purdue University and Ivy Tech. If you haven't heard about it, I just heard about it recently, and it's exciting what is going to be available. The other thing that I want you to know about Muncie Community Schools is 27% of all 2019 graduates of Muncie Central High School graduated with either credentials from Ivy Tech or an associate's degree from Ivy Tech. Do you know how much that saves our residents on college tuition? If somebody comes out in 2 years out of Muncie Central High School and already has 2 years of college completed, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. So Muncie does great things with the school systems. When you add the Indiana Academy, which I think is ranked as the top school in the state, and you add Muncie Burris, which is a top 20 school in the state, I think we've got education covered. And I don't have a slide on this, but I just have to mention this. Muncie's got basketball covered too, because tonight, Muncie Central, Daleville, Cowan, Muncie Delta, and Wapahani all have basketball games, and we have a shot at four of them winning and the sectionals tonight. So go Muncie Central. This one's near and dear to my heart, but I'm a runner. But we also have the best trail system in the state. 61-mile Cardinal Greenway is the longest trail in the state. And there's all kinds of connectors. There's all kinds of other different opportunities. And we have a number of parks, as you can see. Muncie also leads the area in recreation. Prairie Creek Reservoir alone has over 1,200 acres of water. It's the second largest city park, in the country, second only to Central Park in New York. You can go to Chicago, folks. You will not find a park larger than Prairie Creek. You can go to Houston. You can go to Indianapolis. You will not find a park larger than Prairie Creek. We have a great resource. And look at all the things you can do there. Biking, hiking, horseback riding, fishing, swimming, boating, camping, sailing, yacht club, playgrounds, shelter houses, bird watching, nature outings, and more. It's great. Another thing that I honestly didn't know this, and I'm a little embarrassed, but the second largest children's museum in the state of Indiana is located in Muncie, Indiana. That means what? Second largest. So Fort Wayne, Carmel, no. Second largest children's museum in the state of Indiana. That's pretty impressive. It's time for the Muncie citizens and your city government to start looking at what we should be. We have so many assets in our community. And we have great people in our community. And it's time for us to take it and do what's right with it and move forward and be what we should be. I heard this quote from, some of you are probably football fans, but Pat McAnally, who was with the Cincinnati Bengals. His quote talks about how easy it is for people to change their view of something, and yet the person didn't really change. So if you don't know, he went to Harvard as a football player. Obviously, he had the grades for it. And then he was good enough to play in the pros, so he played for the Cincinnati Bengals. Well, look what his quote said. Whoops. At Harvard, they labeled me a jock. In the pros, they considered me an intellectual. He was the same person. I want Muncie to view itself as it is. Muncie should view itself as the capital of East Central Indiana. It's time for us to do this. In fact, our success, the success of Muncie, is critical to East Central Indiana. It's time for us to accept and embrace our role and do what we need to do to lead this area, which has been struggling, out of the doldrums. Muncie, since 2010, has lost 2.2% of its population. Delaware County has lost more. They've lost 2.46%. But those are the best in the region. We need to take the leadership, and we need to do what's good and do what's right, because our future is bright. Muncie has the largest population, and I've talked about this, in the area. Muncie is the retail and auto sales leader in the area. Muncie is the hospitality and the restaurant sales leader in the area. Muncie is the employment and medical leader of East Central Indiana. Muncie is the education leader of East Central Indiana. Muncie is the recreation leader in East Central Indiana. Our time is now. We will not shy away from the responsibility to lead. The city of Muncie and me accept what we should be, and we will lead. And here's how we're going to do it. Our Muncie City government will do things the right way, always. Our Muncie City government will be open and honest, always. Our Muncie City government will seek out input from you, from citizens, always, from businesses, from not-for-profits. This is what we need to do, always. Our Muncie government will begin to excel in our finances, always. The Muncie City government will excel with our policies and procedures, always. The Muncie City government will excel in its commitment to our people and serving our people, always. The residents of Muncie elected me to be the mayor, and I will lead. And we're going to take the rest of the area with us. When we bring success, that helps Delaware County. When Muncie and Delaware County have success, that helps all of East Central Indiana. The time is now to do it. Let's all take responsibility to lead in our homes and in our families. Let's all take responsibility to lead in our churches and our schools. Let all of us take the time and the responsibility to lead at our employers and with our businesses. Now is the time for Muncie to do this. It's important. And I promise each and every one of you that the city of Muncie will be doing what is right for everybody, and that will help us prosper going forward. It is not something I can do by myself or that my team can do, but I guarantee you their focus is on excellence. And I'm so proud of my team and the employees of the city of Muncie. But together, we can all improve the city of Muncie. We can improve the county of Delaware, and we can improve East Central Indiana. The time is now. We must do it, and we will do it. Thank you all. Goodbye. God bless.